Lou Donaldson, the composer, leads off on alto sax with this tune, Lou's Blues. Lou Mitchell on trumpet, Horace Parlan on piano, Lemon Jackson on bass, Dave Bailey on drums, and a favorite of mine, Ray Barreto on congas. This was part of the complete Blue Note Lou Donaldson sessions, encompassing his work from 1957 to 1960. This is Lead Stories, Avitrice Lead, and lots to talk about. For one thing, we are being warned here in Florida of the possible, well, we don't know if it's true because Donald Trump has not confirmed it. And he is our meteorologist in chief. So he hasn't said it, so it's possible that it's not true, okay? So we're waiting to see if he says it and confirms it, preferably on a printout map with his Sharpie. But we are being told that another depression is forming and heading our way. And it may hit, if it follows the course, it would hit us somewhere over the weekend. So we have to see how that goes. But, you know, we're getting really tired of this. We want it to stop. We need somebody to make it stop. I tell you. Well, you know, tonight is the big night. It is the big, what they're calling, they're still calling these things debates. And we know that they're not debates because nobody's able to really confront an opponent and see where that conversation goes. It is more, as we've said before, like a Q&A. They're just asking questions. There would be a panel of journalists, all of them from corporate America and corporate media, I should say, and somehow we're supposed to get the idea that by taking the people out of the equation, it would have a better look. it would be more useful in terms of information, to have the journalists ask the questions and completely get rid of, you know, those pesky independent media people have a habit of making things very difficult and embarrassing. This is the third of four Q&A sessions. I will insist on calling them Q&A sessions because they so far have not been debates. And the idea is to pare down this herd of Democratic presidential candidates down to two, eventually, who will run for the top spots as party designees. So we'll see 10 candidates who survived the last winnowing after being asked questions at that debate. 10 of them will appear tonight as the culling, those who have been culled by reason of, you know, not making the grade in certain areas. Tonight at Texas Southern University. And as you watch your screen, you'll see from left to right, at least this is the way they have arranged it, Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, former Vice President Joe Biden, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, California Senator Kamala Harris, entrepreneur Andrew Yang, former Texas Representative Beto O'Rourke, and former Housing and Urban Development Secretary Julian C- Castro. So that's the setup for tonight. The moderators are ABC's chief anchor, George Stephanopoulos, World News Tonight anchor and managing editor David Muir, ABC News correspondent Lindsay Davis, and Univision anchor Jorge Ramos. So that's what's happening tonight. By the way, we should know, and it should not be ignored. And you know, it's the small things that you pay attention to. Texas Southern University is a historically black college within the family of HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities. So the Democrats get some points here, at least this is what they're thinking, for diversity, you know, to take this big event to a historically black college and university member. So there we are. The question is, what do you think is the, at this point, because we have only one more of these, thank the Lord, to go. But what so far has emerged for you, in your view, your personal view, what has emerged as the most significant outcome so far? And how are you leaning based on the information culled from these Q&A sessions? I'd like to hear. 888-874-4888. Let's hear what you're thinking about it. 888-874-4888. You know, there's a reason that these debates are being scheduled, and there's an outcome being hoped for. What do you think it is? A lot of money is being sunk into these debates. And they're not just debates. I think we're clear about that. They're not just debates at all. So what could the reason be? They're telling us this is about a culling process, with each debate, supposedly the people get a better understanding of what the candidates represent, what they are interested in promoting, and how they're hoping the people react to them. Okay, E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
You said that they were going to thin the herd down to just two, but that's not going according to the script that I was reading from them. I think it's going to come down to five people, and that would be Bernie, Biden, Warren, and maybe Cory Booker and Kamala Harris, and then they would have the primary with the five of them, and that would make that would be how Biden would win with like 30-something%. And Bernie would be second with her, and they would split up the other 40. Well, that's the script that I was going by. I didn't know why. Is it necessary to get down to two? Hello?
I'm sorry? Yes, I'm listening.
I said, is it necessary for them to get down to just two people?
Well, one presumes one will be the presidential candidate, and one would be the vice presidential candidate, and there's no other office in a presidential race that really matters. I think they want to get to the big fight with the opposing party.
Okay, but it could come down to five people, and they could still have a primary with five people in there. Am I correct?
I don't know if that is workable. I don't know if that is something that is allowed. I think after, when they reach a certain point, after they have winnowed out all their their candidates, by then we're close to the actual race. So the thing is to get to the race itself, which would of course have opposing candidates. So they have to decide early enough to allow people to decide for themselves which way they're going to go on the Democratic candidates.
Okay, so I see it coming down to five people. Biden gets the nomination. Bernie decides to run as an independent, takes Elizabeth Warren as his running mate. They're a good team. They look like a good couple together. And Biden could go with Hillary or Mrs. Obama. And I don't understand why Tulsi Gabbard has been taken out of the scene here. She had to go to serve in the National Guard or something for a while, and
yes,
she sort of like lost her grip. She was the only one making sense, so this looks like they took out the one that wasn't going according to their plan. And I find that kind of unfair to her. I thought she was making some good points. Anyway, what I wanted to say is that the last Q&A session that they had, the one with Biden and Tulsi, instead of tuning into that, I tuned into Back to the Past, to 1960, for a real debate when John F. Kennedy mopped the floor with Richard Nixon, Milhouse Nixon. And Nixon was so nervous and so discombobulated, and Kennedy
and all
was
that
so
sweat
calm.
On his face.
Excuse me?
He had all that sweat on his face.
Right. That was normal for him, but he was extra fidgety and he looked fairly unprepared. And Kennedy, who was obviously in back pain, totally was able to overcome that and sat there nice and calm. It was a really, for a whole hour, Sander Van Oker was one of the questioners. I forgot the commentary person, but it's on YouTube, 1960 debate. And then the point is, after that debate, Nixon blamed that debate on why he lost the election to Kennedy. And, you know, Nixon was vice president with Eisenhower, so he was supposed to be the big guy. And then for 17 years, they didn't have another debate, a presidential debate. Johnson didn't want to, and they used the war as the excuse for not having any more debates because they didn't want to have any leakage of strategy and stuff like that. So for 17 years, from 1960 to 1977, they did not have any more debates because Richard Nixon didn't want to have that. And that just shows you what we're dealing with, and that was back in 1960. So
as it's shaping up now, who is emerging, in your view, as a reasonably powerful force as we go into the primaries?
There is no powerful force, but they are trying to make Elizabeth Warren look like she's got some credibility to her. But like I said, I'm going by the script that I came up with, and I think they're following along with it just to make me happy. And, it's going to be Biden because it's all so phony. I feel like I'm living in the Twilight Zone, and I'm waiting for Rod Serling to come and tell me that it's all just a dream. And, it's really, I really urge the listeners to go back to 1960 and watch a real debate and
a
how
real
a debate should be run.
Thank you for calling in today and contributing many things that you put on the table to think about.
Thank you very much.
And especially for your sense of humor, too.
Thank you very much, Eutrice. Have a nice
day.
Right.
You too. 888-874-4888. Okay, as we get closer to this Q&A tonight, how are you feeling about any of the Democratic Party candidates that we have been presented with? What do you think they're trying to communicate something to us? What do you think it is? Is there, in your view, a tacit hint by the party itself that we should turn our eyes to a particular candidate or candidates because the party leadership favors those candidates? Or do you think that this is a wide open contest where the party is excited about the possibility of independent thinking on the part of the public, and they try to just excite the public to get the public's response in line with what they already think? David from Brooklyn, how are you?
I want to get to the point. You know, this is a brilliant, brilliant game. And people have to understand it as it is. What you have there are these so-called candidates who are on stage to trick the people into thinking that they are working in the interests of the masses of people in the country. They're going to say things that attract people and say, oh, that sounds good. Free college or this or that and other things that people may want and sound attractive, even though if any of me gets in there, or whatever thing they say that they seem to feel is attractive to people never can happen. You know, there's so many hurdles you have to jump or go under or around with the Congress fully in the pocket of the ruling class. So you can say anything, and anything that you think will favorably impress people, that is people in terms of the masses. However, there's something else that you have to realize. Whatever they say at these so-called Q&As that they have, it's going to be different when they have those meetings with the captains of industry, the corporations and boards and all the major people in the ruling class. They're going to have to say something else that is in harmony with maintaining the same thing that we have here now, in effect, which is a republic run by ruling class people and having the masses of people think they're in the democracy. So generally speaking, as I know it, you don't get to be president by just thinking you can attract the people. You have to answer and please those who rule, because those who rule are the ones that really control this one party that we have. The Republican Democrat Party is in the same bag because they are run by those who rule. So you can tell the people one thing at these so-called, quote-unquote, debates, but when you really want to get some power from those people who are really controlling society, control 99% of the media, and really run the government, that ruling class group, you have to tell those people the things that they want to hear for you to get by. So you can present yourself as a very progressive person to the people, but when you get into those closed door rooms and talk to those captains of industry, you better have a story that's going to be pleasing to them to maintain so they can maintain the power and the interests that they have, and which is profit, more for them.
So what do you say then about candidates like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or Andrew Yang or Beto O'Rourke, who have spent quite a bit of time and money and effort to impress the voting public that they do not share the same views or the same attitudes of the standard issue Democratic candidate or the standard practices of the Democratic Party, that they're moving away from that model and they have something else to offer. Do you think that that offers a different tact, a different look to the party?
The way I see it, you can go and tell the people, you give the okie doke and you play the people well, you play a good, Stradivarius violin and charm the people and whatnot. But if you want to get somewhere, it's very difficult to cross the ruling class. They have too many ways to cut you out. They can manipulate, especially the media, to keep you ignorant. And they are so powerful that those people who are talking these progressive ideas are going to have a difficult time if they are seen as people who really want to change the predatory capitalism that we have here. You see, because this is why we have a country where a small amount of people are getting richer and everybody is getting poorer, because that's the nature of the economic system that we have here. And, those people in charge don't want that to change. So when you're dealing with these predators, they understand that you can give the people the okey-doke and tell them anything, but when it comes down to doing something, it's different. It's no different than what happened with Obama. Obama can talk all his things about hope and change and progressive things. Well, when it came down to push to shove, he was in the bag with the ruling class. His cabinet was all essentially all ruling class peoples. And then he forgot about some of the progressive things that people wanted, like, a new program for health care. He just bought the program that the ruling class would be able to salivate. So, and the things that he presented, progressive things, many of them, the ruling class went along for a while, but they knew that they could be overturned easily. When Trump got in there, he just reversed some of these things that weren't a law or something, and, they just went back to business as usual. So, as I see it, this whole game, just like the title of my book, Playing the Game, it is a big game. And those people that are up there in this Democratic quote-unquote debate, if they're not responsible to those who rule, I don't think they have much a chance, no matter what it is. And, there's a sign that's clear. A couple of days ago in New York Times, they had a good story on Warren, and I understand she's having small contributions, but they got into her history, and her history is one of getting large competitions, donations from those who rule. So, those who rule, you don't have to have those big debates for them, but you have to let them know on the side that you're down with their program.
Well, having said all that you've said, do you still have hope that one or two candidates actually differ from that model?
Well, I'm not sure of that. I that would be nice, but as I see it, no, I don't think that those candidates up there are so dumb as to think that they can really change from the predatory capitalist economy that we have to something that's progressive and it's beneficial for the masses of people who live there. I don't really believe that. I think that they may talk this talk to the masses, but they know that you're not going to get anywhere if you cross those who rule at the top, the ruling class that really runs the country.
Well, a lot to think about that you put on the table for our consideration. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Well, here's Gwen. Haven't heard from you in a while.
Oh, it's, well, I have to work. So I'm a slave to this job and I can't do it. I can't ever get the lunch hour right. Hi, Therese. It's so good to hear
Hi.
You.
How
and the audience, you? Everybody. I know you know that I'm going to go to Bernie again, and I'm going to stay with Bernie, especially since I watched him in it wasn't a debate, but the CNN special on the environment. And what I can't really understand from people is, like, what is it they want? Now, I know the media is pushing Elizabeth Warren because she's going to lose for sure against Trump. She cannot win. She will not win against Trump. She has very close ties to Hillary because she got on the Hillary boat last time. And as a person, as much as I think she has a lot of integrity, she still capitulated and got on the Hillary boat. And so I can't just jump on the ride with her. And what I like about Bernie is I like a guy who just says what he says and sticks with what he's going to do. And all of these ideas, I love these pranksters that are all next to him acting like they came out and they invented these ideas, or that they would even have the gall to discuss these ideas. I don't mean gall. I mean the courage to talk about these ideas that Bernie did put out in the first race in 2016. And since has really expanded upon. And I want to put this out to the audience that truly, I had the strangest experience. I was at work with a woman who's a Trump supporter. And I don't even go down that road with her, but I was talking to somebody else about Bernie. And she said, Bernie. She said, well, now I would go with him. If he made the ticket, yes, I would go with him. And then I started doing a little research. And, you know, the polls show that if it was a race with Bernie or Trump, that Bernie would win. And the reason why he would win is there are more independent votes collectively than the Democrats or the Republicans put together. And the independents would go for him, but what they're looking for is a change. And when they knew they weren't going to get that change with Hillary, then they decided to go with Trump. And I can't vouch for what kind of change they're looking for, because this change was like a little too much for me. But on the other hand, for sure, we almost know that Hillary would have taken us to war. I mean, Trump is terrible. But I think staying on the point of Bernie is that there's nothing in the whole world as important right now as climate change. Nothing. And everyone still is up there trying to mitigate it, but mitigate the cost of it, mitigate the sheer hugeness of it. And I just think that Bernie has a very, very good understanding. I was so happy when he talked about not making any more nuclear power plants, because he's 100% right. Nuclear waste has a 500,000-year afterlife. There's no way of getting rid of it. So listen to Cory Booker. I don't know what world he lives in, but why would you create more of this mess? And also, with these hurricanes and these gigantic storms, why would you build more of these plants? I mean, doesn't he know about Fukushima? So I think that for me, that if we're not going to put Bernie in there, and I've listened to all the corporate media, and it sounds like they're like NPR is really jumping on the Elizabeth Warren bandwagon, and you know, because Elizabeth Warren probably sounds the most like Bernie, but she's not going to make it against Trump. She's just not going to do it. He's going to get up there. He's going to call her Pocahontas. She's going to sound faltering, and I don't think that she's going to make it. So I think if I also think there's a lot of people that are in it to fail it. They don't really want to win an election. They don't really want Bernie to bring that kind of change. I'm talking about people on the left, people that talk about change and how badly they want that change. But I don't really know that, because if you really wanted to change, I think you would really get behind somebody that has a record that's reliable and that has big ideas. And these ideas, by the way, are not crazy. This is like totally President Roosevelt all over again in so many aspects. So I feel bad that I think we're going to end up with Trump again, because I really think that we keep getting offered candidates that would give us something that we can use. As far as the corporate media and the powers that be, I also listened to a woman on Guns and Butter this week, two shows named Whitney Webb discussing the Jeffrey Epstein case, but all of the things, the tentacles around it. And it was outstanding. And I would have asked the listeners to take a listen to that, because it was daunting and completely just, it was like somebody just poured tar all over me when I listened to this, how invasive and intrusive, and how we really don't have a government anymore. What we really have is we have a mafia that's tied in with a government facility that allows these gigantic millionaires and billionaires to keep getting away with everything, including child trafficking and murder and exploitation of the people. So whoever gets the nomination, if they are an honest person, they're going to be stopped at every point they can be stopped by these larger powers that be, which are right in our backyard, by the way. I mean, I've been in cosmetics for years, and yes, I know about Ronald Lauder, but you know, I didn't know how deeply. And I live 10 blocks from the Dalton School, and I always knew there was something really weird about that place, because we've got one man that comes into our coffee shop that's supposedly tutoring like these 13-year-old girls, and he's always looked very strange.
Okay, but Gwen, you're off the mark.
Yes,
you're not
yes,
usually
okay, so let's
off
just
the mark.
My candidate,
I want to ask
my
you a question about politics and how people relate.
Well,
to
that
politics
is politics. Politics
sense.
Is owned by these entities. It that is absolutely politics. You don't own anything, and you don't have a candidate that's not owned by these people. And if you think so, you're completely living in the clouds. That is where we are. And we really, in my opinion, this country is in such a crisis because we've let this octopus get hold of everything. They have everything. And they certainly have the media. So, you know, but you can't tell that to anybody. You can't give them that truth because they don't want to hear that truth. It's too hard. It's too difficult. But until
so
we
bring
get
me back,
to
bring us back
that,
to the central argument on the Q&A that is about to happen tonight, being the third of the fourth scheduled,
mm-hmm.
Where are we at this point? Where are you in terms of making up your mind about any of the candidates presented to us so far?
My mind is made up. My mind is Bernie Sanders. I'm going to stick with what's true. His candidacy was bolstered to me by the fact that every single person up there, everyone, has taken his ideas and they've tried to move forward with them as if they were their own ideas. But he was the one that had the guts to speak about them first, and now he's getting even more bold because this is a man that's talking about taking care of climate change in the trillions of dollars, understanding that we are talking trillions of dollars to make the kind of changes. And no one is up there speaking that. They're not saying that. They're not giving America what it doesn't want to hear. It's true we don't want to hear that, but we have to hear that because there's not going to be a planet left if we don't aggressively start going after climate change. So I don't care what he looks like, you know? I don't care if he looks like an old man to somebody else. I hear progressive, honest ideas that sound like they have common sense. And I believe if the guy's willing to go up there and actually speak that into a camera where he knows nobody wants to hear this, then I think this is a man who might have the gumption to push through these ideas. So, you know, okay. Is it perfect to treat? No, but we don't have, you know, there's no such thing as a perfect candidate. There isn't. There is progress and there is not perfection. So if we can get a little piece of what we want, and I actually think that global change, or the way we treat global warming, is extremely important, then I would settle for just that at this point. But, you know,
okay,
at this point, let's
move on so we can get some more views as well.
Thank you so much.
Yours have been splendid today. I want to thank you for them and calling in and sharing your thoughts. Thanks a lot. 888-874-4888. As you listen, you're hearing people give very thoughtful responses to the question of what they're expecting. And I dare say we're hearing a lot of the answers we've heard before. And is it because people are becoming more and more resolute about their own opinions, that they've given it some thought, whatever else is out there, they've given that consideration, and it's not ringing true. It's not coming home to them the way the candidates mean it, the way the party means it. So we're nonetheless getting closer. We are as close as we could get, only one more of these Q&A sessions to go. And by now we should have some kind of idea of which way we're leaning and why. Why are we leaning? Are we just saying, well, I can't stand those people, so I'll pick from the group that's left? Is that a particularly helpful way, or do we want to know this time around, especially with this president, do we want to have a strategy in mind also as to how the vote, not only what the vote will be, but how you think your vote would help carry out whatever you see as a vision for the next president of the United States? Or are we being a little too altruistic, a little too optimistic, a little too naive about politics? This is a very nasty game. So could you give us an idea of how you yourself, how you feel yourself coming to a conclusion? Whatever it is, it's fine. But I just am interested in the methodology that you have used so far to measure your own evolution in the way that you're thinking. I think it would be helpful. So if you're that brave, there's no reason to be fearful about it. We are a nice bunch of people. So if you could course us through, honestly, whether you have changed your opinion. And if you're not, that's important too. But what is your conclusion now? And what do you think it would be at the end of this whole process? What do you think you might have contributed to in terms of the party's direction and decision? Do you think you would have contributed to a forward thrust of this party? That the party is seeing not only ways in which it could win, but ways it now would have to account for itself. If there are many people like Gwen, who just talked about how she's leaning. When you have a voter like Gwen, let's say, or a voter like David, or some of the earlier voters, when you listen to them, you're listening to, or Ephraim Edgewater, you're listening to people who are putting some thought into their view and how that view has changed over time because they're thinking differently. Is that what's happening to you? Are you thinking differently? And in what ways do you sense that your different way of thinking is leading you to make political decisions that you might not have made before? Have you become more militant? Or have you become more analytical? Have you become more fed up with the system? That's what we're getting a lot of, people saying they're just disgusted with it. Are you feeling like this is a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it comes down to who has more power to realize the prophecy, to make the prophecy happen? I don't know what I think about politics at this point myself, except I'm fed up with it. I cannot understand how a nation with such capabilities, such talent, such knowledge, such expertise, and people ready and willing and able to do it. Why do we not get anywhere within an appreciable distance of what the people want? Is it that difficult to ascertain what the people want? Or have we reached that point? As Gwen said, is this really just politics itself has undergone such a major change that we can't comprehend this new politics because it's so intricately interwoven, and we are still stuck in the view that it's about the Democrats and the Republicans? No, it's about a gang of people who, irrespective of the ideological tag they wear, are essentially of a class, a new class, we don't want anything to do with in real life. But this is what we have to do with. We're stuck with this new system, and it just can't change that easily. George from California, tell us what you're thinking.
Hi. Yeah, I'm thinking. First of all, I don't really see why anyone would vote for Biden. He just seems like a bunch of nothing. But do you know who Danny Sheehan is?
Yes.
He mentioned last year, about a year ago, that the Democratic National Committee, is that what it is, DNC,
yes,
had already decided that Biden would be the winner. He would go up against Trump. So I think Danny Sheehan might be good to have on your show. Talk to him about this.
Yeah, but, it's what I want to do. I don't see myself as a publicist.
Is that
if a person has something to say that educates us about the intricacies of a situation or a system, that's music to my ears. But I think, though, we also have fallen in politics, and this is a great part of politics, whether we want to admit it or not. It does come down to the Hollywoodization of candidates. They have to find a way to make themselves sexy and attractive to the voters. So we have that culture. We have that culture going. How do we educate voters to be voters, conscientious voters, smart voters, thinking voters, not about one issue, but about the system itself? Do you feel that most candidates are able to do that, to bring to voters a kind of comprehensive understanding, not only of the system, but how they are trying to manipulate themselves through the system and what the end goal is for them? Do you think that is happening?
Boy, I don't know about that. I do know that there are a number of candidates that I would think have, that would be great for being president. But I've mentioned this to you before. Gore won the popular election. Bush got the White House. Trump lost by over 3 million votes. He got the White House. If we're talking about votes, I have yet to be convinced that it's worth voting. As long as they have that electoral college in there, unless I hear that they got rid of it, you know, that's where I'm at, like a lot of your other listeners.
But is it important, really, or are we overthinking this issue, that voters are reacting at a particular level about voting, and it may or may not be the level that we want? We want voters who understand this process, but most voters don't understand the process.
What aspect of the process?
What is voting supposed to be? What is it supposed to do?
It's supposed to represent democracy and run by the people.
Democracy. For all these years that people have been voting, when did it represent democracy?
You asked what it's supposed to be. I didn't say that's what it does. I think it gives people the illusion that they have some sort of power to do something. Every once in a while, I talk to someone that's they talk about voting, and I a lot of times I'm just saying that I'm not going to bother with it, and they think that. I remember one guy I was talking to, he said, I rest my case, because if you're not going to vote, then you're not going to get your way or whatever. But a lot of people feel like feel like they have a part in what's going on. And I think it's part of that Republican agenda to just make people think that they do have a voice when they really don't.
Well, it's the same with the Democrats.
Yeah.
And if I dare say so, it's even more so. It's like they're putting voters through a maze. They already know what the outcome is because they've arranged it. They know what they wanted to happen. Even before the vote is taken, they know what is going to happen because they've arranged it.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if Biden's going to be thrown into the ring there, despite what everyone says and how good everyone is.
But let's be truthful. I mean, there's a great deal of concern about his health. The other day, blood was flowing from his eyes.
Oh.
So there's a problem. And he's doing his best to look vital and vibrant and, you know, but you can tell he can't fight the age that he's at. He does not have an unlimited supply of energy. But at the same time, we have three septuagenarians, don't we? We have Donald Trump, who's what, 72, and we have Sanders. So we can't make the argument with these candidates up in years that it is not a good idea to have an elderly person in the fight. I think it's a great idea. But yeah, I think the parties themselves, they have clung to and created, they've created a narrative for themselves that is so deeply ingrained, both in the voters and the communities from which they come, and we're stuck. People are not thinking for themselves as voters. And we have to reorganize voter education completely to let people know. You are a strategist. You are a political scientist when you vote. You got to think about things other than, well, I don't know if he'll win, or I don't know if she'll change, you know, that kind of thing. That's no longer the way we ought to think about voting. We have to think about voting as a strategy to accomplish
what?
What
I think
we never delineate what it is we want. And when we do delineate it, it's usually a one-issue thing. You say climate change. Okay.
Mm.
But what about schools? What about housing? What about employment?
Yeah.
So people are directed to think one-dimensionally. And what they don't get, many of the party people don't get, is while you are thinking one way and you're accustomed to thinking this way, this one thing or two things that really dominate your thinking, you forget you're not the only ones voting. Other people want things too. I have not heard it in the discussions in the so-called liberal wing of the Democratic Party, that they ought to be concerned about employment. They ought to be concerned. I mean, how do you go to just a simple thing like this tonight? This debate is going to be held on the campus of a historically black college. Okay. Everybody is white. Everybody's playing a major role in this debate is white. No thinking at all, because they've already gone beyond this idea of being conscious to make a change. If only to say, well, for visual purposes, we ought to indicate our policy about diversity by showing it in how things are arranged. Not just to say, well, okay, you're having it at a black college. Hip, hip, hooray for you. That's not enough. That's insulting on one level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so because they're still thinking in the black-white level. They still think they're Asians, they're Latinos, they're all kinds of people. So if you are a party of diversity, why aren't you showing what you say you believe? Why aren't you showing people to be brave enough to venture beyond the conscripted lines, the barriers that have been set up for them, so that they are not moving too far away from what they've been conditioned to think and to do? George, it's been nice that you called, but you can make your point. You can make your point.
Just that most people, I think I've said this before, they get their information from the media, and the media, mm-hmm. you know, is controlled by six corporations. And, I mean, even when I talk to people and hear what they have to say, especially the ones that love Trump, there's a lot people don't know. And I hear myself saying a lot that people do not know what's going on. And I think that's a big part of it, too. They have no resource. They turn on the TV or the radio. Some read newspapers, books or magazines, but most of it is the same stuff controlled by the same people. So what people think is that. So it's like different angles. It's real interesting how insidiously the Republicans have really taken over every aspect.
Because they believe in their mission.
They believe
and they're
in their
clear
mission.
About, they are very clear about what they want to accomplish.
I mean, even with the Supreme Court, this last
incident. When people are serious about what they want to accomplish, they make it happen. The Democrats have taken just about every kind of voter for granted. They just want you to show up and vote. They don't care whether you believe in their views. Thanks, George, but we gotta
go. Thank you very much, Eitri.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much for calling in today and contributing. And tomorrow, as you know, is Free Your Mind Friday. Stop by and free your mind. Bye-bye.